6.5% was it? Is that what the current odds are of the Stanley Cup?
Well, and if you look at the round by round progression, the Stanley Cup favorite is the Vancouver Canucks.
Like, what a time to be alive!
Talking you through every goalie controversy, scoring slump, and draft lottery bust. This is the C4 Podcast on CanucksHockeyBlog.com. Here they are, the best starting lineup we could afford under the salary cap. Chris, Matt, Anna, and Adam.
Welcome to another episode of the C4 Canucks Hockey Podcast, brought to you by the Full Press Coverage Network and CanucksHockeyBlog.com. I am Chris, at LifeForce, joined virtually, as always, by Anna Forsyth, A4Sy03, Anna, the hater of Tottenham. Welcome,
that's
Anna.
That's me. Yep. As always, we're usually talking about, like, sport or something before we start, and this time around it was you relating the Whitecaps woes to me, and me relating Arsenal woes to you. But yes, I also had the misfortune of going to the Lennox pub last night. Nothing wrong with the pub in itself, but it is the Tottenham pub in Vancouver.
So, gross. I wouldn't have known.
I'm pretty familiar. I found out yesterday that the Newcastle pub is the Moose Down Under, which I've been Moose's? To many a time. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it's random. But, like, there, I love the people there. They.
Oh, no, I love Moose's too.
They're supporters of netball, so they always host us for the netball dinner every year. I think we've been there together, no?
Mm-hmm. We have.
With the blog father, JJ. Mm-hmm. That was a very random night out. You should have stuck around. But yeah, I met some Newcastle fans yesterday, unfortunately. They were lovely, but yeah. The game, the result of the game was not so good, unlike the Canucks.
Well, I mean, the Canucks apparently are a good team, Anna. I don't know if you've heard, but apparently
I've heard it. It's a rumor.
They are a good team. I was chatting with my uncle earlier this past week. We met up for lunch, and he had asked me, Chris, like, is this the real thing? And I'm like, I haven't a clue. There's absolutely nothing on paper that tells me this Vancouver Canucks team is good. But hey, look at their record. What do I know? And like, the statistics, this was before the subsequent San Jose game and then game again this weekend against Dallas, had the Vancouver Canucks as a 10% favorite of making the Stanley Cup final. Like, I remember there's actually a clip from like Matt and I talking about this years ago that's part of our old intro that we need to replace, but I just never get around to doing it.
Yes.
Yeah, it is unbelievable. The Vancouver Canucks are in the position that people are like, whoa, this team is apparently the real deal. So I think we'll get into that.
It is funny, though, don't you think, that, like, we don't like other fan bases insulting our team, but we also don't like other fan bases talking about our team being good. We're just like, don't perceive
us. No one insults our team like we do.
Yeah. We kind of like to have the ownership of insulting our team, of being really negative, and we get hostile at people being negative towards us, but at the same time when it's like, talking us as Stanley Cup favorites? No, we don't like it either.
Yeah, you take that back. So, you know, let's get into the week that was. Predators rolled into town. We talked about this on our last episode. This was sort of the game where I thought Vancouver, they've got some confidence. They've shown that they can beat Nashville. They're coming off in a game where some arguably egregious refereeing cost them the game in overtime. So a little chip on their shoulder to prove that they're still good. And, you know, the result would tell you that the Vancouver Canucks are good. They beat the Nashville Predators 5-2. The problem is they went about it the somewhat hard way because they proceeded to allow Nashville to score 2 goals in 30 seconds near the end of the first period. And it was at that point I'm like, oh, that's the team I remember. Surprise! Happy Halloween!
Yeah. And especially because it's like Colton Sissons. Is his first name Colton? Anyway.
I don't know.
Cody Sissons? Sissons, anyway. I was just like, yes, classic. Because it was, yeah, the two BC kids, and it's always just the local kids that
oh, yeah.
the Canucks let slip through their fingers or...
And help, you know, elevate the prowess of it. And I don't know if it's the local kids come to town and are like, they amp their game up just that little bit because they're playing in front of their fan, like their fans, and family.
Wow.
I'm having trouble here.
You've got a lot of Fs to give right now.
So many Fs to give. Speaking of Fs to give, off the rails, if you happen to have an opportunity to listen to a recording of the radio broadcast or post-match interview with Vanni Sartini, the head coach of the Vancouver Whitecaps, he had plenty Fs to give too. In fact, he gave so many, he's probably going to have to pay quite a bit of money for them out of his wallet over the course of the offseason. But back on a regular scheduling program, Canucks come out of the second period because I think Tocchet might have had a little say-so with them to show that they're actually a good team. Petey getting a goal, not even a minute in.
Do you think he used the S word?
He is the shiznit.
I was going to, yeah, the other S word that starts with S and ends in T, but is also four letters.
Saint? Yeah, he's a saint.
Let it count, maybe. Yeah, like, it was just like, okay, there's like proving that you can turn around from like a loss to a win, but like mid game, like I think that's different from what we've seen in the past. Like rather than Canucks just getting in a hole and staying there.
Well, this was the old style that we got accustomed to during like the AV era, where mm-hmm. a Vancouver Canucks team was never out of a game. Like yeah, there was some boring hockey playing on occasion because once they took a lead, they sat on that heck of it. But if they were behind, that was when the exciting style of hockey would come to life. And a team could easily, if they were down a goal or even two goals, like, no sweat. They'll even it up next period. No problem. I'm getting those feels from this roster. Petey, you know, deciding that the second period was his to own. Tying it up 53 seconds in, and then as they come to a close, putting the team ahead by a goal well into the second intermission.
Yeah. I mean, that's what you want, right? Like, you want your starters to step up when they're behind, and the Stars are being starry right now. Like, Petey and Quinn, they're, like, stepping JT? Into the light. I know. Yeah, Thatcher. Talking about giving some Fs. Like, JT, like, forechecking, not giving up on plays, just like, whoa.
Yeah, I remember hearing some conversation at the end of last year when Tocchet was brought in, and it was around how JT Miller needs a coach like Tocchet to sort of put him in his place, tell him how to play, and to keep him honest. And JT Miller should thrive in that type of scenario. Whereas if you were to look at sort of Bruce Boudreau, great guy, but arguably a player's coach, which JT Miller is not the type of player that apparently does well under a player's coach. Tocchet seems to have, you know, got that memo and is now squeezing, you know, every ounce of effort and Fs out of JT Miller as he can. But how this then allows the roster to sort of evolve is amazing. Like JT Miller on the top of his game suddenly means the Vancouver Canucks are no longer a sort of one or two man threat. You now have to pay attention to multiple players, and he's becoming that power forward that he was always imagined to be. In fact, you could argue, but 2.5 seasons ago, he was.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly right. Like, Bruce Boudreau was exactly what Vancouver needed at the time when he took over. But you're right, he's, like, a nice guy. And maybe, like JT and Pucks last season, he let too many things go past him. So this, like, it was unsustainable, and, like, Tocchet is the opposite of that. But, yeah, JT would not admit, I'm sure, that he is, like, putting more effort in, but it's obvious that, like, the eye test, it checks out.
And, you know, talking about JT, that goal he scores in the third period, great goal, timely goal, puts the Vancouver Canucks' foot directly on the pedal. But it's almost as if him getting that fifth goal motivates Petey to catch up, because it occurred to me that Petey was doing everything in his power to try to generate just that additional goal to get it out of that sort of, you know, dangerous two-goal lead. And sure enough, he did. Granted, there wasn't a goaltender in the net at the time. But hey, right? At the end of the day, that's the fifth goal of the season for Elias Pettersson.
Yeah, and a hat-trick is a hat-trick.
Exactly. The San Jose Sharks, sort of moving into that game. What's going wrong in San Jose?
What's going right? I mean, it looks miserable.
They scored a goal against Vancouver.
Yes. Or did they?
Well, hey.
Again, they don't draw pictures on the score sheet. It counted. I don't know. Like, obviously, I get it. Like, if you try and challenge that goal in the 10-0 loss, like, yeah. It looks very bad, and the code requires you to, like, beat someone up because of it, but, like...
Man. No, like, no, but the way the game went, like, if Vancouver needed someone to score a goal, they did in San Jose. Like, Beauvillier hadn't got a goal all season long, got two in San Jose.
Yeah, exactly. You get a goal. Everyone gets a goal.
You know, Lafferty is on fire. Suter got his first of the season.
That was so, like, good to see because, like, he was, like, the most deserving of a goal. He's looked so good since he, like, started in Vancouver, done everything right, but was not getting the stats to show for it. So it was nice to see.
And I had sort of run into friend of the show, Joe Karp, this weekend, and he and I were chatting sort of about this game, and you know, I hadn't realized that Petey may or may not have picked up a knock over the course of this sort of short road trip or this short week. I did notice when I was watching the San Jose game that I didn't see him on the ice. I was actually concerned, like, did he get hurt? But you know, when a team's winning 10-0,
that's which was great,
right?
But you can rest Petey.
Yeah, and that was the thing. Like, who had the most minutes up front? Suter, 1942. He led the forwards. In fact, if it wasn't for Ian Cole getting 20 minutes, 56 seconds, Suter would have led the entire team with ice time. That's how good of a game it was.
Yeah. And, like, I mean, that's Beauvillier's 500th NHL game. So, like, good for him. Got the two goals, got going this season. He's also looked decent, but at least in the last couple of games, so it was nice to see him get a goal too. But, like, yeah, Sharks were being very charitable, apart from to that child who was at his first NHL game.
Oh, I know. When they showed him, we didn't see him on the Canadian broadcast because it was in the US broadcast, but the moment pictures of him started showing up on Twitter, I'm like, oh, poor kid. Like, that's your first NHL game. Hopefully that's not your last.
Yeah. And people were saying that the hope that San Jose didn't give him a do-over game on Saturday because, Shark shovel 10 again.
Oh, really? I hadn't heard that, but...
Yeah. I mean, like, I have no idea what happened to this kid, but I just hope he wasn't there again.
But this sets up the Vancouver Canucks coming back home to take on the Dallas Stars, a team who is a good team with a goaltender who is hot, which in the world of the Vancouver Canucks. Okay, well, no, I meant
I'm just kidding.
In regards to the play on the ice, not the player on the ice.
He has good hair, though.
If we know the Vancouver Canucks, they like to ensure a goaltender who is playing at the top of their game is shown how to continue to play at the top of their game. And thankfully for the Vancouver Canucks, they too had a goaltender who's playing at the top of their game, Thatcher Demko, who just was like absolutely fabulous. I'm trying to think who it was that had that shot that was essentially a goal.
Yeah, the tie. Yeah. Oh my God, it's so good.
And the way Thatcher makes the save, like they show it in the slow-mo and it's like, oh, he didn't even have to try. Like he's on the other side of the net, but no problem. He's going to stretch and reach. Got it. And he's just calm, cool.
Wyatt Johnson.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, not exactly like her. But yeah, like the fact that he, like, stop that. I mean, like you say, like Jake Ottinger is like a great goalie,
and that goal played phenomenally.
That save for the majority of the game was also insane. Like highlight
what, the one where he just stuck his glove up, or the kick save?
I was thinking of the glove save where, like, how do you even see that?
Well, he doesn't. I mean, you look, if you watch the replay, the camera angle, you watch the puck. There's JT Miller. There appears to be a goaltender behind him. Not entirely sure. It's hard to see. And all of a sudden, a glove just shows up.
But he does peer out the other way to try and find a look, and then sticks his...
But going the wrong direction.
Yeah.
Right? Like, it's quite hard to be moving one direction and to react to the opposite side, right? Which he, you know, to his credit, did. The Vancouver Canucks also, and I wanted to talk about their power play a little bit. They're looking dangerous on their power play. Like, if there's one thing that you and I have asked the team to do when they have the man advantage, what is it, Anna?
Play like you have an advantage. Move the puck.
Move the puck, right? Move the puck, move it quick.
Yeah.
And while the Vancouver Canucks didn't see any joy on the power play against the Stars, the fact that they were able to cycle the puck around and generate the opportunities that they did, I think bodes well if they can continue this over the course of the season. I do have some worry that they play a little loose, especially with the whole fact that, you know, they put everything on Quinn's stick, and when Quinn brings the puck up the boards, then it's Petey back there. I got all the faith in the world with Petey, but I don't want to see Petey having to go and break up an odd man rush that goes the opposite direction. But
yeah, but like, I guess that's a risk you take. Yeah, like the static power play they had before was just a thing of the past. Like,
well, where they would, everyone would touch the puck, but they just move it from, you know, just around the horseshoe, back and forth, back and forth, back and forth.
Yeah, weird little exercise where you're not allowed to shoot until you've had 20 passes.
Exactly. It's a game of 20 passes. You know, it's interesting because if you watch the Vancouver Canucks, anytime they've gone into 3-on-3 hockey, they move around quick. They have a lot of player movement. They generate chances and sort of through that chaos. Then last season and seasons previous, the power play didn't do any of that. This power play is more like what we see from 3-on-3 hockey, where you take opportunities in the space that you are now given. And when you have the man advantage, generally that space is space for you to use, not the other team. But enough of the power play. Suter gets himself his second goal of the season.
I know. When this is from Carlson Susie, who's looking fantastic on the ice. And yes,
does he look fantastic?
Does, actually. He is beautiful. But
Dakota Joshua got his first apple of the season, first point.
After being...
he had a good game.
Yeah, after, like, that's how you respond, I guess.
Well, you don't, like, to Neil me, Talk Joshua like getting the point isn't actually the big deal. It's how he played the game. He played a heavy game, and he was smart on the puck.
Yeah. Yeah, which is what you want from him. You want to use his physicality, but not, like, indiscriminately, and not to take risks like we have seen in the past. So, yeah, I loved his game, and... oh my god, I can't stop thinking about Philip Hronek's pass to Pettersson. Like, it was so beautiful for the goal. Just, like, I think Thatcher Demko's save, like, Jake Ottinger's save, and that pass, just, like, frame it all, because it was,
How isn't beautiful. It nice to have more than one defenseman that can actually set up an offensive play?
I know, it's stunning.
Like, And then it's not just the defensemen doing this. Like, the Vancouver Canucks have decided that they're going to go and play crazy with sort of like some Sedinery, where they have no-look passes up the ice to set players in alone. Like, the was it JT to Besser? And then I think we saw the reverse the game before.
Yeah. Yeah, because that was the Besser breakout. Yeah. Yeah. Like, the passing on Saturday was just really good.
It's the confidence. Like, they are playing with so much confidence right now. They are actually doing things that we would have never seen the previous team consider attempting, because they were too busy gripping their stick hard and worried that they'd make a mistake. And if this team were to go and make a mistake, they seem to be so confident that they can bail themselves out of it that they're not too concerned. And I'm actually confident
yeah,
watching
which
them.
Which is weird.
Like, I, again.
Very strange feeling.
Talking to Joe, we agreed. This is a team that's fun to watch. Like, and I think for me, I've been very clear the entire time that I've been recording this podcast. I like entertaining hockey. You know, case in point, how many times did I say I don't mind if the Canucks lose as long as the game was exciting?
Yeah.
I don't want them to lose, but the point is I want exciting hockey. I'm getting it. I actually enjoy tuning in, watching the team play. It's a good feeling.
Yeah. Also down Highway 1, Baby Canucks also 1-2. Artist He Loves got a shutout, named First Star. And Ashley Baines is going from strength to strength. He, you know, when you look at players that are sent down and you want to say, I want to see you, like, stand out and show you don't belong in the AHL. That's what Ashley Baines looks like right now. He's a class above AHL.
Which is great to hear. But then if you were to reward that opportunity, who on the current roster slightly like that? And I actually don't have a problem with this. I actually have zero issues where you as a team have so much depth that you've got players who deserve to be in the big league playing the way they are down in the A, but not having the room to bring them in. Cause that exerts right. That pressure on your roster, knowing that a phone call could be the difference between you on the ice or you upstairs.
Right. And that's like a good thing. And also just like, injuries are going to happen. They are. So, like,
how dare that, you, Anna?
Like, I don't.
Curses.
Think, yeah. That's a jinx. That's just going to happen. And also, like,
defensively. Next thing you're going to tell me that the Vancouver Canucks are going to get 6 shutouts. Speaking of which, he got a shutout when he should have had 2. Just saying.
True. But, like, obviously, Coach Tockett said. I don't like calling him Coach Tockett. That was weird. Rick Tockett. Like, I'm not one of his players. Rick Tockett said, that Thatcher deserves to have, like, a little bit of a role. So, like, obviously, Casey Smith will have to, like, rotate into the lineup sometime. But, like, this is Thatcher's team. And that was good hearing. Like, yeah. Like, clearly, he's earned it.
Yeah. Casey will get an opportunity next weekend.
Yeah.
Which we'll talk about now. Vancouver Canucks play against the Edmonton Oilers on Monday. The Oilers, not as bad as the Sharks.
But bad. Yeah. Like, the Sharks have 1 point in an overtime loss. Edmonton have 5.
Yeah.
Like, I mean,
Conor
McDavid's back, but he's not really back.
No, I know. I was going to say, and I know we don't follow the Oilers, but like, I don't think anyone would have thought the Oilers would have been in such dire straits at this point of the season as they currently are.
Yeah, and I think people are saying, like, I've heard lots of people saying they'll figure it out because they have such good players in Connor McDavid, in Leon Draisaitl, in, I mean, Nugent Hopkins is a different conversation, but, like, there's a few players, but like it's kind of what happened to the Canucks that like the goaltending, like, but they don't have the goaltending, right? Like they're struggling defensively, but they don't have goaltending to bail them out. They haven't had a world-class goalie in a long time. I kind of had this conversation this week with an Oilers fan and they debated that, and that's fine, but like when you like, if you don't have that solid defense, like, you need, like, better than average goaltending to steal games for you. And it doesn't matter how good your, like, front end is. And right now the front end is struggling.
Yeah.
You hate to see it.
Except I don't.
Except we don't. Except no. It's just very funny.
So the Canucks play Edmonton in a game that the Vancouver Canucks should win. The Canucks then go to Ottawa to take on the Senators in another game. The Vancouver Canucks should win because the Senators are equally having struggles of their own. But the problem I see right now is you have 2 games against teams you should win, which historically are the trap games for the Vancouver Canucks.
But then wasn't San Jose a trap game, quote unquote? Like,
true, it totally was. No one told the Canucks though.
Yeah, exactly. No one told the Sharks either. But yeah, Nashville, like, that could have been a trap game. Like, they've already beaten them, but now have Nashville figured them out, blah blah blah. Like, they just don't seem to fall into the traps as easy.
Mm-hmm.
So I have a little more confidence. The next game after that, Toronto? Against the Leafs.
Hockey night in Canada?
Yeah, that worries me more.
You've got the Toronto Maple Leafs on the Saturday night. You got the Montreal Canadiens on the Sunday night. You have, and okay, the November 11th Remembrance Day game. Hockey night in Canada. There are going to be a lot of eyes. Toronto is going to do, well, I guess Toronto can't do anything because no theme nights. But the point is there will be many, many people focused on this, and the energy in the building is likely going to be above that as to what they would have experienced in Ottawa and arguably maybe Edmonton. I do agree with you. That's a game I worry about.
Ottawa don't go hand in hand, do they?
Yeah. No.
But yeah, it's for sure a game I worry a bit more about. Canucks and Leafs. If Leafs are doing fine, they're not doing great, but yeah, I don't know.
So if the Canucks were to take an L, and only one, which game is it?
Toronto.
Yeah? You don't think that they take the L in Montreal, take the dub in Toronto?
Oh, I see what you mean. Like,
because if you're going to start Thatcher.
Yeah.
I think you start Thatcher against Toronto and give it to Smith the Habs. And I'm not knocking to Smith. I think DeSmith is a capable backup. But you're going to have a team that will have played back-to-back on a weekend into hockey mad Barnes.
Yeah. I think you're right. But, like, and that could be huge. That's a huge game for that to. And if Canucks struggle, but Thatcher's able to, you know, hold them in it, then that's massive for him.
Yeah. Take a moment now to let you know, we won't be here next week, with it being a long weekend. We'll be off. So I thought what we could do is we could actually look ahead a further week. When the Vancouver Canucks come back home from the road to take on the New York Islanders, Wednesday night, the 15th. Oh, cool. Is the Larkshiders game?
Uh-huh.
Or is it Anna's going to a game?
No, it's Larkshiders, and it's Diwali. Once again, all the Diwali merch looks sick, but I do not have $750 to spend on a jersey.
That's too bad.
But I will probably get a sticker or two.
But the Islanders, they're kind of in the middle of the pack as well. To me, this is a game that you come back from not a long road trip, but you do have a couple of nights at home. Islanders,
Bo's back in the building.
Think they? Oh yeah, that's the welcome Bo game, and thanks, you know Bo. he'll be up to play.
Yeah, for sure. And honestly, like, there's been a lot of talk about the sort of Bo era of captaincy because of Quinn's captaincy now, and like him stepping into the role well. Like, I get that people can say that Bo wasn't the most inspiring captain, but I think he was captain in the most difficult of circumstances.
Oh, no doubt.
And I think he did what he could at the time. And, like, he was handpicked by the Sedins, like, as their successor. Bo didn't get to pick his successor, obviously, but he said if he did, he would have picked Quinn. Mm. And, like, I think, despite his, like, comment about, like, you know, the Vancouver building being a little quiet, but, like, PD literally this week said it's fun to play here now, like, implying that it maybe wasn't before. So yeah, I'm not mad at Bo, but yeah, it is, peace be with you, like, he had to move on. And
love you, Bo. Like, hope you lose.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I'm okay with him moving on in new era.
Yeah. So Islanders come to town. This is if when we talk about the context of trap games, to me, that might be a trap.
Yeah, I see that.
So now thinking, you know, Bo being back in the building. NHL scheduling is fun. So the Vancouver Canucks then leave that night to go to Calgary because they take on the Flames. So they come back for one game, go back on the road, take on the Flames in another game that could very well be a trap game. Flames not doing as poorly as the Oilers, but that's not, again, saying a whole lot. And then they come back home to take on the Kraken on the Saturday for some late night hockey night in Canada action. The Kraken are actually doing better when we think about the division. That said, that's also not saying a lot because they're middle of the pack. Like you think about the Pacific right now. Like you have two teams, well, three. Vancouver, Vegas, and LA. And there's a bunch of other teams that are apparently in the division right now. That just seems to be the way things are going.
Yeah, and isn't it funny? It's like, it's almost like the old days where of the Northwest Division where like Canucks were utterly dominant, but it was a pretty weak division. Yeah. And now it's like Vancouver and Vegas and somewhat LA. But like, again, the division's still pretty weak, but Vegas, like you would say, is still like the team to beat in the whole West. I mean, the Stanley Cup champs, like, yeah.
Well, they're playing like they want to win it a second time around, so.
Which is, like, fair enough, because was like, they put all their eggs in one basket to win it that year, and fair enough, like, their title defense is doing decently well, unlike the England Cricket World Cup title defense. Oh, well.
Oh, well. Anywho. I think we'll be back in 2 weeks' time to talk about the Vancouver Canucks either continuing this trend of dubs on the scoreboard or potentially running into a couple of traps and maybe derailing themselves a little bit. But if that were to be the case, I actually have some confidence that they'll be able to turn things around as they continue to head towards the end of the calendar year. One thing that you and I are about to turn around, though, is our show, because we're going to take ourselves a short break. You're listening to the C4 Canucks Hockey Podcast, brought to you by the Full Press Coverage Network and CanucksHockeyBlog.com.
Take hitting out of the game. You can't hit anymore, so don't do it.
The unsportsmanlike conduct, I want to get an explanation on that.
No kidding.
Because how do you get suspended for unsportsmanlike conduct?
Plus interference. There's no interference there. He had the puck.
Now, Madison never ever did that before. Now, why did he do it? Is that because he was mad?
Well, your early favorite for the Calder Trophy, that's for sure. Elias Pettersson, you might even say your early favorite for the Hart Trophy.
Just to get back to your question, Elias is going to play plenty. He's going to get a lot of power play time. And yeah, I'm concerned about our offense. We lost 200-point players, and we've got to find a way to score.
An argument often gets made that Vancouver Canucks players, or beyond that, players in the West, struggle to get the attention of those Eastern media folk who go to bed way too early and therefore cannot see the play of Western teams. So, with the Vancouver Canucks team as hot as they currently are, going out east for a weekend of hockey on a weekend of a lot of eyes in Toronto and Montreal, one has to think that if they were to put in a solid result, the Canucks will get noticed. Why do we bring this up? Well, you put in the rundown that there is currently three Canucks who have solid shots at NHL rewards. You've got Demko with the Vezina. You've got Hughes with the Norris. And I'm going to presume Petey, you're thinking MVP.
Yeah, although right now he has a decent shot at the scoring title as well.
Mm-hmm. Which means MVP, right?
Yeah. The heart and the art, I guess. And I have kind of put a cheeky reference to Mikheyev being Selke.
Well, you can't spell Selke without Mikheyev.
Yeah, if you spell it wrong, sure.
I'm sorry. I just remember the whole big thing. You can't spell Selke without Kessler.
Yeah. I mean, like, we all know that, like, Bergeron, like, won that 100 times in a row, like, but, and I don't really think that Mikheyev's in the conversation. One, it's way too early. He's still, like, yeah, we're just very impressed with how he's come back from his injury, and maybe surprised, but, we've talked about Demko being dominant for a long time, but kind of like how you can't have, like, you can't give the MVP to a player, like, on a crap team, even though I think that kind of makes sense. If the defense, like, even though that shows off more the fact that he was dominant when the defense was so terrible in front of him, like, people don't like that. They kind of want to give it to someone who's, like, keeping out the pucks and playing on a dominant team and helping his team be dominant, right? So I think now that that's happening, like, and yeah, like you say, like, huge game this weekend, huge road trip, like, where the Eastern Writers actually pay attention to teams when they play in Eastern Canada or on the Eastern Seaboard there. Like, yeah, I think it's massive.
It is, and it's also equally important that the team put up results to continue to keep themselves in the conversation or to, quote-unquote, maybe cause a writer or two to stay up a little late to see what's going on. Now, I want to actually talk a little bit about the Vezina first, because one of the crazy things about the Vezina is that the goaltender who wins it doesn't always have the lowest GAA. And it's arguably the goaltender who's on the best team that wins it. Now,
yeah, which is, like, weird, because, like, what is the Jennings for, then?
Well, that's the thing. The Jennings is for that, but this is why it becomes an issue. Like, right now, Thatcher Demko has the best GAA of goaltenders with, like, six or more games. And the reason I say six or more is because I think Reimer has, like, five. And it's so early in the season that the difference between an eight-game or a five-game, you know, start – not a whole lot. But Aiden Hill in Vegas has himself a 1.81. And that might seem like significantly worse than Demko's 1.55. People are like, oh, look at Vegas is good. It's their goaltender. Even though Thatcher, like, this comes even to, like, the MVP. If Thatcher isn't in net for Vancouver right now, they're nowhere near as good as they have been. Yeah, they're exciting to watch, but they have relied on Thatcher to keep him into early games and make some crazy saves. Like, he doesn't go and rob Dallas. Dallas goes up 1-0. That game is different.
Yeah, yeah. Totally. I mean, Aiden Hill, like, God, he must be happy to have gotten out of San Jose. Like, won a cup and, yeah, playing behind Vegas defense rather than San Jose. But yeah, I think he has been stealing games and standing on his head for a long time. Like, we joke about Bubble Demko. But, like, remember that video that came out? Did I talk about this last week on the pod, or that was on Twitter? But where, like, the video that came out during the lockdown, during the COVID shutdown, of him starting to practice but not on the ice. And literally, it was the cringiest thing you've ever seen, where he was, like, really slow, and everyone was like, oh, this is our, like, backup? Like, what are we doing here? Like, and then, look at him now! Like, boy done good. Like, I think he's been dominant a while, but you're right in saying that the NHL do not like rewarding terrible teams with good goalies.
Well, Vancouver, in fairness, isn't a terrible team as it stands. They are there with Vegas. Like, Vegas is ahead simply because of games played.
Yeah, yeah. And I guess I'm saying, like, they have been terrible when Thatcher's been good. So, yeah. I think it's, a legit chance. But, like you say, it does require some Eastern Writers to stay up past their bedtime for a few nights down the stretch.
Now, Quinn Hughes, leading defenseman in scoring, 16 points in the season, only four back from the lead, which is shared by Petey and another Hughes, Jack, who, can I just point out, Jack doesn't have any trade protection right now. Hmm. You know, I get we're going to talk about, like, Petey and getting his $70 billion or $11 billion or whatever the heck it was that Friedman said he should get. Yeah. But let's say, you know, Petey isn't going to be back. Would it be possible to call New Jersey to say, hey?
Reuniting the Hughes brothers in Jersey, like, I know.
Hey, let's just do it in Vancouver now instead. Yeah,
exactly. Because Luke Hughes is third in rookie scoring. Like, what do they put in the water in Michigan is what I want to know. Because, yeah.
Specifically the Hughes household.
Yeah. Actually, we do know what they put in the water in Michigan. That was a bad comment to make. Let's scratch that.
I can't edit it out. Low budget. But the Vancouver Canucks could have this conversation. The Hughes come here as opposed to New Jersey. You never know. Petey himself, as you pointed out, said Vancouver's a fun city to play in. But that's the thing. Like, I can't remember the last time we were able to have these types of conversations. Yeah, it's early. We're a month into the season. But we're a month into the season.
Yeah.
We're not like, hey, guys, we won two games. Woo!
Yeah, parade's and going down Georgia. Has been good for a long time, right? But this is like dominance, and like he's not just playing in a Canadian market, he's a captain in a Canadian market and a hungry Canadian market who hasn't won a cup. Like, talk about pressure. Like, this kid is feeling it, and he is, pressure is a privilege, you know, like, mm-hmm. What does Tocchet say, meet pressure with pressure? Like, Quinn Hughes is stepping up to the plate big time. Honestly, though, like, I joked about this on Twitter last night after the game, but I do think, yes, it's partly the people in the East don't want to stay up, but I also think Quinn Hughes looks so timid and ridiculous that, like, have you seen a less scary-looking...
When Quinn Hughes is excited, his level of excited is like, you know, I just woke up.
Yeah, exactly. He is, like, if anyone's seen the teen that just woke up on SNL, which is maybe my favorite bit they've ever done, that is Quinn Hughes all over. Mm-hmm. And, like, he is so smart. Like, when he talks about hockey, he's really smart, but he doesn't sell himself. He's not funny. Like, he's just not. And, like, even when he's saying something really smart, he sounds like he's, like, about to fall asleep. So
it's just that calm.
He is that comp, and which is great, but, like, I don't think, like, I do think that that contributes, like, subconsciously. True. People are just like, he's no fun.
And therefore, we better not give him an award, because we don't want to celebrate, you know, no fun in this league.
I mean, like, I'm sure if he's walking the line in front of you with the puck and the power play, he's a bit scary, but otherwise he does not look terrifying or dominant in any way, so... Yeah.
Anyhow, I mean, let's revisit this conversation, you know, this time in December and see if, one, the conversation still holds water, and two, hey, how are the Canucks doing? Is the parade still going down in Georgia? I don't know.
Yeah, and, like, honestly, we might look so dumb in December for being this excited about the team, but, like, Canucks are fun to watch right now, so we got to take the joy whilst you get it. Like, don't spend your time wallowing in, you know, it might rain tomorrow. It's going to rain. It's Vancouver.
It is, exactly.
Enjoy the sunshine.
I like the weather analogy, because someone once asked me, when it comes to the Vancouver Canucks, why do you get so excited? It's because, you know, it's just like sunshine during the rainy season. When it shows up, you celebrate the hell out of it. It's the most beautiful thing you've ever seen, because you know what tomorrow brings, and it's not all that good. With Vancouver, I'm long-suffering enough to know that's going to happen. Just hopefully not, like, anytime soon, because I am enjoying the ride. Last week, we talked about player safety, and what has now started to occur is some forward thinking, maybe not in the NHL per se, for reasons, but we're now seeing the use of neck guards as being the, players will wear them. I believe the Vancouver Giants is an organization locally. Their players are wearing them. The Pittsburgh Penguins, they've told their farm team, you're wearing them. And there does seem to be, I'm not going to suggest an appetite to introduce them in the NHL, but a conversation that goes to that line that we sort of introduced, where you come into the league, you got one on. It's optional for everyone else who's currently in here, but eventually It'll simply be the reality, whether it be helmets, whether it be visors, now neck guards. It's unfortunate it took such a horrific event to be the impetus for that change.
Yeah.
But I am glad that it's being taken that seriously.
Yeah. Like, there was a really good conversation during the intermission. I'm pretty sure of the Nashville game. Yeah. And like iMac and Satish are like talking about like it being like somewhat inevitable, because they said, you know, like, I think it was Sat was saying, like, they can't say if this happens in the NHL, they can't say they hadn't been warned, right? Like, the worst thing has already happened. And I'm, for one, am pleasantly surprised at the sort of interest and uptake already. Like, I think Yanni Gourde, I don't actually know if he ended up wearing it for the game at the weekend, but he was certainly wearing a neck guard in warm-ups and said that he's trying some different versions out and seeing what feels comfortable. And he wasn't sure if he was going to play with it yet, but yeah. And TJ Oshie, I think he definitely warmed up in a neck guard. I'm pretty sure he played in one in the Caps game during the week, so... Yeah, I think the more it becomes normalized, the better. Like, just with big names like that taking the step, because you know that their wives are at home, their loved ones are saying, their mom's calling them up and saying, you do not get on that ice without protecting yourself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would be genuinely shocked if by the start of next season, neck guards aren't grandfathered in. The only reason why I could see it not happening, and as silly as a reason as it is that the collective agreement becomes a problem. Yet, like, how is you as a PA would look to argue over this? Like, as in the league, like, to me, that's the wrong message to be sent. Like, it's common sense. Hey, we need to do this. It's going to be grandfathered. We're not going to impact any NHL player. Their choice now, but every new player in the league got to wear it.
Like, yeah, and like, honestly, I was asked by a friend back home, because it happened in England, like, I got a lot of texts about it. And I said, honestly, I don't hold out much hope for the NHL, like, moving forward with this. So I've been... Yeah, like, surprised in a good way over the conversations they've already been having. But yeah, I do think also the more this edition of the NHLPA might be more forward thinking. So, unless there's a huge amount of pushback from the players, I think I'm with you.
Well, and, you know, to talk about the Penguins specifically, now, Adam Johnson played within their organization, and as a result, the Penguins obviously are maybe more sensitive to what's occurred than others, but also look at who owns this team. We're not talking about an organization that comes from sort of the old school hockey, you know, code group. It's the Fenway Sports Group. I mean, say what you want about the Fenway Sports Group, but this is an organization.
And Liverpool that fans have. And Liverpool fans have.
Yeah. This is an organization that looks at things quite a bit differently than most. I mean, case in point is how they've run the Boston Red Sox in Major League Baseball. Like, I mean, if you've seen the movie Moneyball, which is, again, it's a dramatization, but Fenway Sports Group saw what Oakland was doing, said, but we've got a lot of money. I wonder if we could do even crazier stuff with that. Like, here is an old school organization that looked at this completely new way. And what happens? Boston figures out how to make it successful, wins themselves a World Series or two. Now, in the hockey world, who is it that they've now brought in? Someone who doesn't fit within the mold of the, you know, GMs that have paid their dues in Kyle Dubas. But again, to me, this is an organization
that... Yeah, he's another computer boy, so yeah, there you go.
But this is the thing. I don't mean to say this in the sense that it's going to cross, but they're going to view their players as commodities, and you got to keep those commodities safe.
Yeah.
Like, well, when you have that level of clout speaking up.
Yeah, we've talked about this before when it comes to concussion. Like, even if you're looking at hockey players as commodities, like, it doesn't make sense to not take head injuries and concussion seriously, because your assets will depreciate, like,
significantly.
But yeah, you're right. Like, also, kind of going back to what I said of leading by example, we're looking at the Pride tape thing. It was sort of proved, like, it took a player on a two-way contract to do it, but it just proves, like, players have power. They speak up, a few mm-hmm. important voices speak up, and that's how you can change the culture.
Well, again, a week ago, I don't think you or I, if you were told this is going to happen, we would have agreed with you. We would have looked at the league as being, nah, it's not going to change. It needs to, it should, but it won't. And yet, look what's already happening. So,
yeah,
it will be back in 2 weeks' time. What more might have changed? Maybe the clouds will have parted, the light will have shone on the league, and they'll become much more progressive in their thought in a number of different areas.
Well, we can only hope.
Mm-hmm. But as mentioned multiple times at this point, we are going to be off for the next 2 weeks as we take next weekend off to focus on ourselves, our family, and our loved ones. And as we do, it is a long weekend. So please, don't miss us too much. That said, you do want to take part in the conversation with us. You can do so at any time through Discord, discord.io/C4podcast. Or alternatively, we're still on Twitter or X or Zitter or whatever it's called, at the C4 podcast. And we're on Threads at the Real C4 podcast. We also have an Instagram account because I needed to create that to do the Threads account. But hey, I couldn't get the C4 podcast. I could not get C4 podcast. So we're the Real C4 podcast on Threads.
Because we're real. Yeah. Some people can confirm that.
If you want to support the show, like our supporters Neil and Anna's mom have, you can chip a few dollars our way, either as a one-off, where you can buy us a coffee, or as Anna and I like to tell you to do,
buy me a pint.
And that's by going to support.c4podcast.com. You can do it as a one-off. You can do it as a monthly contribution. You can do it as an annual contribution, which just takes the monthly ones, multiplies it by 10, and helps us sort of pay for our bills when it comes to the hosting of the podcast, the software we use to record, all that jazz. It is costly. It's your support that allows us to continue to do what we do. And our broken website is at c4podcast.com. One day I'll get to fix it, but I don't know how to do it. So till then, it's broken. But Anna, got any final words of wisdom for our listeners this week?
Well, in the tradition that I'm accidentally upholding, I'm also wearing another fun graphic tee this week. Would you like to read it out for the listeners?
Totally. Anna's here all about the making whoopee.
Yeah. Coolest name, team name in hockey. The sadly defunct making whoopee. This is one of my favorite t-shirts. So, yeah. I don't have any wisdom. Just, like, have fun, I guess, because that's all we got.
Well, I saw the shirt, and I saw just, like, the top. I'm like, oh, Anna's making whoopee. And I wanted to bring it up in the show, but I just didn't realize I had to wait for you to do it.
Yeah.
Final words of wisdom for me? I got none. I never do. I'm not that smart. It's one of the reasons why Anna's here. She's the brains. I'm just the guy that records it. But on behalf of Anna, A4P03, myself, Chris, at Light Force, I'm signing off with We Out.